Sean Pesch is the founder and chief investment officer of Ranmore Funds, a favorite amongst the BizNews community, and a participant at the BNC 7. It's just under a month today that we're going to be gathering in Hermanus. And once again, Sean will be giving us the value of his insights. Today, though, we're having a look at the Black Swan event that's hit South Africa. Black Swan. Explain what that is, Sean. What's a Black Swan?
Well, Alec, actually, interestingly, on a Saturday morning, I like to go for a run around Virginia Water, and they've got two Black Swans there. And what a Black Swan is, it comes back to Nassim Taleb's book years ago called Fooled by Randomness, where he first raised the concept. And the point he made was just because, you know, the people in England, they'd never seen a Black Swan. So they didn't know a Black Swan existed. But there was a Black Swan in Australia. And then when they landed in Australia, it's like, oh, well, here's this Black Swan. And so a Black Swan in financial terms is something that you've never seen, but just because you've never seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Okay, so it's often talked about as a risk that you didn't see coming. And so things like 9/11, that would be a Black Swan. You know, the pandemic could arguably be a Black Swan. We'd seen pandemics before. Those types of things are considered Black Swans, things that are not forecastable. And, you know, the future is uncertain. It's unforecastable. We all like to think we know about the future. And that's why we as value investors don't want to pay too much for the future, because it doesn't often turn out how you expect it to.
So investors who are invested in South Africa, and that is pretty much everybody who lives here, given that the authorities only allow you to take 45% of your portfolio offshore, have been hit by a Black Swan event. I mean, who would have thought that this guy, the new guy in the White House, had nothing better to do with his time than to train his crosshairs onto South Africa, threaten and get the response from the ANC, which is today doubled down by saying, we are not listening to you. We will be going forward with the ICJ trial and, in fact, giving him the finger. Now, this unpredictable Donald Trump, one wonders what's next.
You know, Alec, I am no Trump fan. Okay, let's just put that on the record. But I understand that half the world or half America voted for him. And I've got my views about that. But just as this could be quite interesting, and I'm not a political analyst either, and maybe this is something for the esteemed political analysts on your program to think about. But in a discussion with a fellow South African the other day, he raised an interesting point. He said, don't you think there are lots of similarities between Trump and Zuma? And so I started thinking, I said, what do you mean? And we sort of then started kicking some ideas around. If you think about it, they're both populists. They're both deeply divisive. They're both convicted criminals. They're both womanizers. They both disbanded anti-corruption units early in their reign. And they both, both live in a compound. Okay, Mar-a-Lago and Kandler. And so if you think that Trump will be good for the USA, perhaps think about how bad Zuma was for South Africa. That's what I think. And if you see how he's turned against some of his closest allies, you know, the Canadians and the Mexican, and ripped up an agreement that he himself negotiated, I think it's just deplorable behavior. And so I'm no fan, and I think he's unpredictable. And I think that's going to be damaging. And if unpredictability, you know, that comes through in markets, you've got uncertainty. Well, you pay a lower price for uncertainty. Okay. So these Trump tariffs, I mean, it's an autocracy what's going on there. It's like, oh, executive order this, executive order that. I'm not a fan. And I think it's a good time to actually look elsewhere in the US. And I think the markets are actually looking elsewhere, Alec, because if you look year to date, the S&P 500 is up 3%. Okay. The NASDAQ's only up 1.7%. Do you know that Brazil's up 13% in dollars? Europe's up 10. DAX is up 11. Hang Seng's up 8. India's down 4. So that's just, you know, over the last year, with the Trump bump, the get rid of regulation, that we're going to rip up and save costs and all the rest. That's what international market participants think of it. And I think it's something, you know, this is at a time when most investors, if you look at the asset allocation of their funds, the asset allocation of their individual portfolios, You know, the MSCI World's got 74%, 73, 74% in US equities. Well, we've got 15. So, you know, and we've got lots of money in some of those places. So, but it's always interesting. You know, European banks up 39% over the last year. The NASDAQ's up 23. Who would have thought European banks are beating the NASDAQ? Well, we've spoken about European banks on many occasions. In fact, you know, I know we've spoken about ABN AMRO, which is up 7% today on results. Now, year to date, Barb is up 33, Nvidia's flat, Tesla's down 19. Imagine being, you know, if we'd had a poll and said, okay, well, who thinks that on the 12th of Feb that the Tesla's going to be down 19 and Barb is going to be up 33? So it's interesting. And that's, of course, yeah. So I think the world is unpredictable. And I think people are sitting up and taking notice that this is not good. It's not good for tariffs. It's not good. It's not good for inflation. Terrible for economic growth. It's raising costs. And if it raises costs on everything, you know, aluminium, well, that's used in beverage cans. Raises costs, what does that mean? It means I've got less money to spend on other stuff, which dampens economic growth. And the other thing I'd raise, sorry.
You and your colleague, Andrew Lapping, are both South Africans. You are based in the UK. When you have a look back here at this little country, because we are small, 0.3% of global GDP, but a country that is in the crosshairs of a big bully over the ocean. We did have the last time a South African governing unit cocked a snoot at the United States. We had the 1985 Rubicon speech and the collapse of the economy. From where you're sitting, are you seeing, because Frans Grenier certainly is, that this is a heightening risk of recurring in South Africa?
I mean, I think it's a risk everywhere. You know, we're not alone. And we should stand up to bullies. And I got into a bit of a Twitter thing with Shane Parrish the other day, who said to Canada, step down, you know, pick a fight, you can win. And I went, no. If you got a bully, you stand up, even if you're not going to win the fight, you know. So this is what I think what's going to happen. This is going to benefit Europe and it's going to benefit other places because America is showing themselves. And look, we're not macro investors. I must make that clear. We focus on the companies, the bottom up. America is showing themselves an unreliable partner. Okay, and so if people can't export to the States and they export to Europe, well, it's going to be swamped and prices are going to fall, and so there's going to be lower inflation, and that's all quite good. So, but I think the rest of the world's going to go, well, you know what, we need to go, and even Canada, we're going to go and find some more reliable partners, and that's what they're doing. And I mean, I don't know if you've seen some of the adverts from some of the Canadian companies; they want to buy Canadian. So they are shunning things. You know, we've seen that in a lot of the U.S. brands internationally. Things like Coke has been out of favor in places because of what's gone on in Israel and it's America's support and all of that type of thing. I mean, we're going to see that. I think we could see that expand. And that poses a risk. And you're starting to see some of the U.S. CEOs coming out against that with Ford CEO. Yeah, so Alec, it raises the risk. It increases uncertainty. This is happening when those stocks are priced for absolute perfection. Absolute perfection. So I think it's risky.
The stocks in South Africa are not priced for perfection at all. And they have held their own despite the spat, which has been very interesting indeed. So when you have a look and you've given us some insights, and I notice you're not talking about South Africa because you don't really have an interest financially in the country.
I do. I mean, my friends and family are there. You know, we've got lots of clients there, probably half our client base is there. In fact, I'm going to be back there next week for my father-in-law's 80th birthday celebration. I have a major interest in South Africa. We have a holiday house then. No, we've got two small South African equity positions. You know, it doesn't move the needle and they're small. But I have a major interest. And South Africa's, you know, it's home.
What are you seeing then, given that you've made this rather emotive statement that you must stand up to bullies, which is, I suppose, there are many different ways of viewing this. Maybe one should be standing up to race-based policies, to expropriation without compensation, to
of course,
you know, other to the property rights attack, etc., etc.
Absolutely.
Within the country.
Stand up for what you think is right.
Yeah. But that's not going to help anybody, if you're investing in a market that gets smashed in the way that it happened in this country in 1985. So are you seeing that as a low-risk scenario, that Trump's bark is worse than his bite?
Well, I think, you know, and I can't remember all the numbers, Alec, but I mean, foreign participation in South Africa is probably much lower now than it was then. Okay, I'm shooting from the hip here. Mm-hmm. But I would guess, you know, emerging markets have been out of favor for a long time. South Africa has been out of favor, as has Brazil and Hong Kong and all these other places. So I think the foreign investors in South Africa at the moment are probably much firmer hands than back in 1995. So there's probably 85. Less risk from 85. Sorry, 85. Mm. So there's probably less risk there. The markets are more liquid. You know, you've got bigger companies like every time it's always different. So for example, right now you've got Chinese tech is doing quite well. Well, NASPERS has got exposure to that. Okay, that wasn't the case back in 85. So you know, the tobacco stocks are doing quite well because they're dependable and they're growing and generate cash and all the rest. They're probably bigger now in the index than they were back in 85. So you've got those things. So as Howard Marks likes to say, you know, I think it was Howard Marks. We certainly quoted it in a book I'm reading, which is exciting. I must tell you about this book called Howard Marks, Mastering the Cycles. He wrote it in 2018, and please put it in the list for the Biz News BNC. I think it's a good one, Alec, and especially right now we need to be mindful of cycles. And of course, if he's the guy that Warren Buffett reads. So if it's good enough for the Oracle, well, then surely it's good enough for us. But, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but does rhyme. And so there'll be similarities, but I'd be cautious to say it's going to be exactly the same as last time.
So you're not, if you were heavily exposed to the South African equity market, given the issues that you raised a moment ago, you wouldn't be rushing for the exit.
And it depends what stocks you own. It depends what stocks you own. It depends what percentage you have. It depends where your liabilities are. You know, each thing is different. But you don't need, you know, the other thing is these days where money is globally mobile at a very low cost, you don't need to take the specific risk of being too overly exposed to one market. You know, South Africa, some stocks offer value, but there's lots of stocks that offer value. And open Brazil and Hong Kong and yeah. So look at your exposure. It's probably not a bad time to look at exposure, but I wouldn't panic and think it's going to be like 85 based on, you know, some initial thoughts.
From your lips to God's ears, because the concerns about that are growing all the time. I thoroughly enjoyed your recent or your latest fund report where you pointed to some interesting truths about the way that smaller companies would be less vulnerable to the Trump view of the world or the way he's trying to change the world with tariffs, etc. Maybe you can unpack those for us.
So, Alec, yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at a large multinational, let's take some of the big tech companies. They've got dollar costs. They've got, you know, half their businesses offshore. If you look at something like Coca-Cola or McDonald's or whatever, they have huge offshore operations. And those would be exposed to cross-border flows, foreign currency, you know, all of that type of thing. Whereas, and obviously it's not, I said generally in that article, and if anybody wants to, doesn't get our fact sheets, they're welcome to sign up at the on our website. But you have got lots of businesses that are more domestic-based, okay? And so something like, let's just, you know, something like Kroger that we have in the portfolio, which is a supermarket chain, you know, that is, it's got US stores. And yes, there'll be some imports, but it's not to the same extent as Walmart or Amazon importing most of their stuff from China. And interestingly, Amazon actually in their annual report said that not only do they import stuff from China, but a lot of the Chinese sellers are on their marketplace and those guys advertise with Amazon. So if tariffs occur, well, those guys are going to make less money. There'll be less money to spend on advertising, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there'll be less money for the UPSs and the FedExes of the world and all these mom and pop delivery businesses. And so my point I wanted to make was actually that, and it varies from company to company, but generally speaking, the smaller the business, you know, the more domestically oriented they'll be, the less exposed they are to all this, is there a tariff, isn't there a tariff? Okay, and what's interesting is small and mid-cap companies have been completely ignored. I mean, I've just been doing a study here recently, and I'm writing that if you looked at the small and mid-cap, MSCI small and mid-cap index, right? In 2009, you've had 16 years, the 10-year compound growth of the small and mid-cap index was higher than the world index for 16 consecutive years, the 10-year compound growth, okay? The last 7 years, the world index has absolutely smashed the small and mid-cap sector. And because you've had massive passive flows, where have those passive monies gone? They've gone into the larger companies. That's meant the smaller companies have been ignored, haven't received their fair share. So it's an interesting place to be. And we have, our portfolio is quite nicely exposed, we think, to those types of companies that have been ignored. And because they've been ignored, they offer great value. Not because anything's going particularly badly for them. And I mean, a case in point, which I know I wrote about a couple of months ago, Mattel. And Mattel came out with great numbers. Now, that's only a $6 billion company, but you think about their brands and the Barbie and Hot Wheels and Matchbox and Fisher-Price and all of those and Uno. And that company's been growing earnings. They've got 16 products now that they're going to be having movies with MGM and Apple and all those kind of guys. Yeah, it's quite an exciting business on 11 times earnings. And so, you know, you think, oh, well, hang on, Mattel's going to be exposed to tariffs. Well, most of the value now is the content with the studios. And yes, you know, if you put 10% tariffs on a little Matchbox car that costs $1.50, it's not going to move the needle. So whereas, you know, you now look at a number of companies recently after the stronger dollar, because what did we have? We had talk of tariffs, right? Inflation's going to be higher. Interest rates going to stay higher. Let's stay in the dollar. Okay, stronger dollar, a number of companies have come out and said that the stronger dollar has hit their foreign component of earnings. They're all large caps. Okay, so guys like Alphabet said, listen, the stronger dollar is going to hurt our earnings. So it's something to think about, but you know, we all know the large companies, the Amazons of the world, the Teslas of the world. We don't know the smaller companies. They're harder to find. They've been ignored. So it's trickier for the individual investor.
And the Chinese tech companies, there was a piece in the FT this morning, our partners in London, which said that pointed out how well the Chinese tech stocks have done relative to those in the UK. Now, in the US, rather. You've got Baba, as you call it, Alibaba, and Baidu as among your top holdings.
Yeah.
Are you doubling up there or just enjoying the ride?
Oh, we're enjoying the ride. We've got sizable positions, we think, 3% in Alibaba. And, you know, pigs get fat and hogs get eaten, so we don't be too greedy. And we think that they're great businesses. They were being ignored because they were over there in China. And then there was this whole thing about DeepSeek and OpenAI, and along comes, I don't even saw the announcement, it was quite quiet, Alibaba's AI product, Gwen 2.5, beat all of them. And now today there's news that Apple is in negotiations to use Alibaba's AI products in their phones. So, you know, these are companies with lots of cash, very reasonably priced. But yeah, so it's, you know, it's the world is not the only universe. I mean, I think a lot of investors think that the only exciting stuff is in US tech. It's not. And I pointed that example in the last year, even with all those fantastic results, even with AI, even with the CapEx spend promises and wonderful earnings, European banks have beaten US tech. And that doesn't surprise us.
It's a complex, interesting, changing world that we live in. And from the investment perspectives, ever changing. Putting you on the spot right now, as we close off this discussion, where would you be allocating fresh money today?
Outside the US. Think about what is, you know, let's come back to Howard Marks's cycles, okay? Where is there euphoria? US tech, large cap. I mean, there was a Goldman Sachs conference in January, and they asked their clients, what sector is, do you think is going to outperform the most? Technology got 42% of the votes. Double financials, which is the next biggest. Okay, everybody is focused on technology. You look at the ETF flows, etc. Meanwhile, the share options being cashed in like no tomorrow. Alec, what's out of favor? Small, mid, ex-US, value, that's what's out of favor. So that's not only safer because it's out of favor, but actually probably give you higher return potential. We'd certainly think so.
And what countries should you be looking at where you'll find these gems?
Well, I mean, places like, you know, people didn't long, you know, here's another interesting stat, Alec. I mean, 2015, okay, the 10-year compound return from the MSCI China Index was double that of the World Index. Okay, 2015, 10-year return. You had 10% versus 5. Everybody said China is the place. We all know that. You know, they've got the best infrastructure. They've got a smart population. You're hardworking. You're highly educated. It's a no-brainer, guys. You must invest in China. Roll forward to last year, the 10-year rolling numbers, 10% per annum in the World Index, 2% over the last 10 years in China. Okay? So right now, I think everybody's making this mistake. You know, the U.S. is going to do well because the U.S. has always done well. You know, I think we're China in 2015. And that everybody's going to look back in 10 years' time and go, you know what, we should be outside the U.S. So, when China, people were strategists, leading strategists of large banks last year were saying China's uninvestable. Well, you know, it's out of favor. So, what happens when this war ends? Hopefully the war in Europe is going to end. Who's that best for? Well, it's good for European companies, you would have thought. Some of these unloved areas, and I think we're going to get to the point where global investors are going to reallocate some of their asset allocation from the States to other areas. And remember, the investors who've been buying these other areas are quite firm hands. So we're not letting it go easily. If you want to come and buy our stocks, you're going to have to pay up. And that'll be good for the returns in those spaces. So you've got to move ahead of the game. Don't stay. You don't want to be cleaning up the after party. That's not fun.
Sean Pesch, the founder and chief investment officer of Ranmore, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.